Two matches this week. First was the catastrophic home defeat to Forest Green. Joe C thinks that we should be very grateful for those seemingly endless 2-2 draws at the start of the season. Richie72 believes that Bow needs to spend less time in the barbers and more time on the training pitch. H. Robinson thinks that the team have been magnificent all season, but that first half was as bad as it gets. H. is not sure if a team can recover from a performance as diabolical as that, but at least the second half gives him some hope that this is possible. Captain Britton thinks that every opposition team needs to be respected, but with the team Bell put out at the start of the game, it looks like Crewe gave Forest Green zero respect. Captain Britton also thinks there's naivety on Bell's part with that selection, as well as an awful 45 minutes. Kev O'Connell also agrees and thinks the selection was poor, with some performances that were really, really shocking. The team has built up a lot of credit this season, but Kev thinks that that was absolutely awful and he's not sure where we go from there. Richard Benson thinks there were more poor early goals given away, and there are a couple of players who Richard feels weren't worth their starting shirts. The last month, Richard also feels that we've been sloppy in the passing. However, in the second half, he's amazed that we didn't manage to score. Tom Mayall thinks that despite the force field across Forest Green's goal, the second half tactical setup showed how it should have been done from the start. Tom isn't sure what Cooney or Lee did to get dropped, and Tom also feels that unfortunately our defence has gone from being an asset to being a liability. Mark Birtles thinks that there was something that existed in this team. You could call it belief, togetherness, spirit, confidence, resilience, maybe even all of them. Mark thinks call it whatever you want. At the moment, it seems to have gone. John Bates thinks it was a lineup thrown out there in the hope of creating some end-of-season momentum. He also thinks it's been a very tough watch since Morecambe, and we haven't deserved any more than the 5 points we've picked up since February. Simon will be quite happy to miss out on the playoffs. He feels we can't score goals and we can't defend, and thinks there's no point putting us through extra games for that, especially on TV. Tim Robinson thinks that we made a very poor team look like Brazil, mainly because we were badly set up with a very light midfield. Tim thinks that the manager has to take blame for that. Tim also thinks this was not a game where a master plan was needed. We just needed to do the basics and let the opponent's shitness do work for us. Adam Turner thinks that it looks desperate now. However, he also thinks that the good news is the playoffs are not gone yet, and two wins would secure that spot, and that is definitely possible. He also thinks that by then we should have Tabernier and CBR back, and they've been both badly missed at the moment. We also need to give Holacek and Kirk more minutes. Joe thinks that we shot ourselves in the foot with a shambolic first half, a catalogue of errors with the main one not being able to pass the ball, and then the novel corner tactic of leaving their biggest man free. We looked a bit more at it second half, but had too much to do, and Joe also thinks there's less said about the ref, the better. Callum Binner thinks the first half was shocking, second half better. He also thinks that since the Morecambe collapse, Bell seems to have scared himself into overthinking everything and chopping and changing the team and tactics. Callum thinks we need to solidify, take the positives from the second half, and move on to next week. It's still in our hands. Sean Rogers thinks into the last few furlongs of the season, and it's like we've forgotten how to retain possession or build up any attacking play. Sean also thinks a few heads out there don't seem to have the drive they had a few months back, but he can't figure out why. Rob Murray is of the opinion that it's looking increasingly worrying. We keep missing easy passes, we look toothless in the final third, and this team are losing belief week on week at the worst possible time. Rob's seen it before. Teams in playoffs with momentum end up succeeding, and at present he feels we look the opposite. Alexandra6077 thinks that the dip in form in these past few weeks is alarming. He also feels we underestimated Forest Green, who deserved the points for their battling performance. Alexandra also thinks we were too weak all over the pitch. James thinks that Mickey and Ed Turns have been really poor for weeks, and he feels that today it's really caught up with us. James says that we won't finish in the playoffs. Glyn Roberts thinks we've got no midfield and the defence are also exposed without Offord. Mason thinks that was a one awful first half, and even though the second was better, we could have gone on forever and still wouldn't have scored. Pete's so angry, he's not sure he can really articulate his thoughts. He thought that Bell was doing his best Artell or Davis impersonation of losing the plot with team selections and formations. He also thinks that the first 20-30 minutes are dreadful. Crew West Ender hopes the whole thing is an April Fool's trick. Luke thinks that the first half wasn't very good. He thinks the second was probably the unluckiest half of football he's ever seen. 2-point blank saves from the Forest Green keeper, one goal not given, and multiple handball shouts not even considered. He had no hope for the officials after a foul wasn't given on turns for the first goal. Neil Hulse thinks if we're going to start such games of such lethargy, we get what we deserve. He also asked the question, why were Lee and Cooney dropped, but Tracy still offers nothing? And finally, Charlie Morris thinks it was a ridiculous selection by Lee Bell to begin with a two-man midfield of two youngsters in Holacek and Osterfield. He feels the match was doomed from the start.
A second game of the week is the uninspiring draw with Accrington Stanley. Trevor Griffiths thinks that grinding out points is not easy on the eye, but Trevor will take it until we can get a few players back. Graham Miles thought that the conditions didn't help. However, even taking that into account, it looked like we were lacking ideas. Graham thinks the players look tired and lacking in confidence, and it was two very poor teams. He also feels there's a real sense that we're limping towards the playoffs. Panini Union thought there was a solid defensive display from either team, but crew were lacking in the final third. He also thought that Holacek is showing good technical ability, and it's now on to Morecambe. John Bates thought that we are distinctly average again, and John thinks that the opponents will be queuing up to play us in the playoffs unless we can find a bit of confidence from somewhere. Captain Britton thinks we're limping towards a playoff spot like a drunkard leaving his local on a Saturday night after a skinful. The captain feels that it's all about hitting form at this time of the year, and he feels that unfortunately the Alex are far from firing on all cylinders. Aaron Lewis questions the point in naming players as subs if you've got no interest or intention of bringing them on. Whereas Adam Turner thought it was a decent point away from home, and Adam thinks it's the type of gritty performance we're going to need if we want to get over the line in the playoffs. Adam notes that there needs to be a little more craft in the final third and nick a goal, but the foundations were very solid. Simon reminds us that, as he said on Monday, he'd be happy to miss out on the playoffs. He feels we're burnt out from the staffed players, and he feels there's no more going anymore. Simon also thinks there's no point in extending the season for two games for another team just to walk all over us. Pete thinks it's another point towards the playoffs. He just feels that we need that win to settle everyone down. Pete is looking anxiously over his shoulder at Crawley and Walsall, who look at the two who might catch us. Pete also feels there's one club that drops and one club that grabs that last place. Mason thought it was like watching paint dry, and he feels there's no spark in the team. Andy Griffiths feels we desperately need to find some creativity and attacking threat. In Andy's opinion, Tracy offers nothing, so drop him. Andy also thinks that if fit, Kirk plays. Andy'd also give ages a go and maybe change formation a little. He feels that the players are running simply on fumes. James is glad to take a point from that, given the players we had out, but he also feels at no point did we ever look like winning or scoring. And finally, Neil Hulse thinks a clean sheet away from home, but the expected goals in the second half was very, very poor, which tells its own story. Neil feels it looked like two poor mid-table teams. Hello, welcome back to the Railway Men podcast. Stuart is away this week, so I'm in the hot seat. And you could argue that maybe he's picked a good week to be away, considering the two games we have to cover. However, we will press on and see how we go. And as ever, I'm going to be joined by a well-worthy panel. With me today, I have James Tate. Hello, James.
Hello, everyone.
Steve Bennett.
Hello, everybody.
And Martin Hough.
Hi, Steve. Hi, everyone.
Good to have you with me, chaps. Now, I was a member of the panel last week when we reviewed the Gillingham game. Before that, Stuart wished us all good luck. So I feel it's only fair that I wish you three good luck discussing these two games we've got coming up. Anyway, let's take ourselves back in time to Bank Holiday Monday. Forest Green at home. We picked up what felt like a reasonable point at Gillingham, providing we back that up with a decent home win against bottom of the table Forest Green. However, pre-match from 2 o'clock, all the talk was of that team selection. Cooney and Lee came out after some decent games at Gillingham. Rowe also benched. In came Billington, Kirk, and Holacek. James, cast your mind back to that Bank Holiday Monday. What did you think when you saw that team?
A tricky one. At the time, I'm still mixed thinking back. I like the idea of having all these creative players in, and without the benefit of hindsight, looking at it at the time, you think, yeah, we've got Kirk, we've got Tracy, we've got Long, Nev, Holacek, a lot of creativity, Forest Green, rock bottom, that could work. And you saw mixed reviews when the teams came out, as you say. And then as the game sort of cracked on, it sort of became evident that it was like we'd tried to shoehorn as much creative talent into the starting 11. It didn't quite work. I thought Lewis Lee was really unfortunate to be dropped. I thought having Osterfield and Holacek as your sort of central two, really, wasn't it? Didn't feel like it would work from the outset. And it didn't. And in terms of formation, I actually don't know still what the formation was, or at any point what we're trying to do.
Can I just jump in there and sort of back up what you're saying about the we weren't sure what we were going to get, were we really, with that team selection? On paper, you think, oh, great, we're going to get at them. But also, I think in hindsight, what it definitely did, and Lee Bell was, you know, he had a go at the players, and quite rightly, because some of them's application wasn't right. However, to me, Lee Bell has to take an awful lot of the blame for that opening, that performance, or certainly that opening half an hour, because he effectively wrote their team talk for them, didn't he? With that selection, you can imagine him pinning it up on the wall of the dressing room and saying, look what these think they're going to run all over you lot. These think they're gonna stick 10 on you. Look at that team that they've selected. They've not shown you the respect you deserve, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that Lee Bell needed to have some enough nous and enough humility, if you like, to maybe realize that himself. Maybe he has in private, but certainly after the game, or well, during the game, he had to realize that, wait a minute, we bought this on ourselves, because making that many changes, we don't have that bigger squad, or certainly not the depth of quality that we can go sticking loads of players in and changing it willy-nilly. And I thought that, as you said, James, I still don't know what formation we were playing, in possession or out of possession. It just seemed to be fluid. They just seemed to be running. It was like an under-8s game, wasn't it, where they all just follow the ball. They just didn't seem to be any shape. And it was, on paper, you could say, oh, well, it's going to have one of two effects. And it did, didn't it? It was either going to be absolutely fantastic, and it was like Brazil 70 or something, that we were just fluid football, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Or we didn't have enough structure and enough ball winners in there to actually get the ball and to give us some shape. And to be honest, I'm still a little bit angry about it, and it's 6 days later.
So I guess the only thing I was thinking back to the Sutton game and how we struggled to break Sutton down. And maybe that was the thinking, just go for it from the off. But as you say, it did backfire somewhat. And kind of the words I had written down in my notes were overconfident. And I think that came from Lee Bell with that selection, and the players kind of followed suit. And that's the way we played. And I'm sure we'll come on to the goal shortly, but we were so aggressive that we were so wide open at the back. in that first half hour. Yeah, that's really what was our undoing.
I absolutely agree, Martin. I think that you made a very good point there. For all of whatever the team selection was, I don't think the attitude and the application was what it should have been. Those players, whether it was from Lee Bell's team selection or whether it was their general attitude, but their application wasn't there, and it was we'll beat these, whatever. And that doesn't happen. It's professional sport. Whatever place they are in the division, they're all pros. They can all play a bit if you give them a bit of space and time, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, I know. Belly came to it in his post-match interview as well, when he sort of confirmed his thought that it wasn't the formation. I'm not sure whether I completely agree, but if it's not the formation, it's the personnel. And if it's not the personnel, because it wasn't, it's still a good side, wasn't it?
Mm.
Then it's the application. And when you look at the three goals individually, which we'll come on to, they're not good goals, are they? Most of them, well, first one's a nightmare. Second one's a set piece. Third one's decent cross. But yeah, we'll come on to it.
Hey, James, you've teed me up perfectly there. Thank you for that. That's like a Kenny Lunt through ball. Martin, I've got to come to you. Like James has kind of suggested, it was apparent from the off that we were wide open. And that first goal in the 13th minute was a bit of a disaster. Could you talk us through it?
Well, yeah, it was just nothing really going on the left-hand side, halfway line. I can't remember who it was, but we just didn't get hold of the ball there. And all of a sudden, it was a two-on-one with half a open field. And really, it couldn't have been any simpler for them. Cross ball, open man, right under Tom Booth. I'm not sure what he could have done about it. But it was as easy as it comes, really.
I think it was turns, wasn't it? And at the time, I thought, that is absolutely criminal what he's done. I don't know if he's tried to see it out or if he's tried to keep it in so he can just knock it back to Booth. But neither's happened. He's got the wrong side of the ball. And in that situation, at this level, you see League Two centre-backs just knock it out of play, just get rid of it, don't worry about it, we'll deal with it then. And he's done neither. And obviously the Forest Green attackers then got through, and it's a two-on-one, as Martin said.
Yeah, it happened literally right in front of us, and you could see it in slow motion, what was happening. I think, no, 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 don't, just put it. Oh, that'll put it out. No, he didn't. No, it was caught in two minds, wasn't he? And in many ways, it's nice that both Ed Turns and us as a club, we're always trying to play it and keep it in play and move the ball. But there are times as well where you just have to stick it in row Z or K or whatever, don't you? Chip it into the fifth, sixth row of that big stand, and it they don't score that, do they? And they don't get the tails up, and it may have been a different day, but it's one of those that, unfortunately, it's two minds, isn't it? And he obviously thought that the Doig, wasn't it? He obviously thought he was on his own, and that it was Mickey in the middle, wasn't it? Would have the time to just play out and, then bring the ball out again. But no, one of those.
Steve, I'll stick with you because it soon gets worse. Our old friend Ryan Innes is involved. Set piece. Take it from there.
Yeah, big ball to the really, really big guy at the far post there. What is it about us not being able to defend these big blokes? It's Salford, it's, well, there's a list, isn't there, of where we haven't dealt with big lumps. And, yeah, the guy, he heads it back down into the box, totally unchallenged. Nobody within the same postcode as him. He had freedom of CW2. He heads it down, and I thought it had gone straight in, but it had shinned it in, and from 3 yards. But no challenge on him either. No challenge on him either. And it was almost more disappointing than the first one to me. I don't know what your thoughts are, guys.
Steve, I'm going to answer your question for you, because you posed a question there, why can't we deal with the big men? And I've just scribbled down two initials for you, because we haven't got a COR and we haven't got a CBR anymore, who might normally have been detailed to be picking up the big fella, and perhaps that's why we've struggled a little bit in the absence of them, from obviously for different reasons. Third one then,
Before we know it, we're 3-0 down. James, talk us through the next hammer blow.
Yeah, so Forest Green are down the left. They're sort of playing down our left side with quite a bit of space and freedom. I thought they were all right, actually, generally. Just on a general point, thought they knocked it around okay. And it comes out to Joe Adams, who I was actually really impressed with throughout. And he puts in a lovely cross. And their man just sort of sneaks in between, I think it's in between Turns and Rio, and gets his head on it. And it's, I mean, it's probably the best of the three which we conceded, but it's not a good goal to concede, is it? But it was a nice cross. And just back on the Joe Adams, I was impressed throughout, and I wouldn't mind us having a look at him for next season. I know it was his first loan from Wigan to Morecambe. So yeah, one to keep an eye on.
And it could have got worse. They hit the post. Other chances as well. James, I'm going to kind of hang around with you here for this. How would you describe the atmosphere in the ground at that point when we're 3-0 down? It could be 4. What was the feeling around the ground?
When the third goes in and there's boos, it's not good, is it? Not for a side chasing promotion or chasing playoffs. It's not what you want. Against bottom of the table, it's bad because we did go into the game with a sense of expectation. I did. You can't help it. The bottom of the league. So yeah, there was boos. It's by no means toxic, but there was definitely shouts of pull your finger out, sort it out, belly. And yeah, at that point, I wasn't sure whether we're better off making changes now, which we ended up doing, or do you wait 15 minutes till half time, try and ride it out, try not to embarrass anyone. But yeah, we ended up making a couple of changes, didn't we?
Yeah, I was going to say that I was more in disbelief than anger, honestly, because I thought it would be a bit of a cakewalk. Probably guilty as anyone else, thinking we got to beat these guys. Looking at the clock, 28 minutes, 3-0 down. Again, my kids were like, well, this is Forest Green. We're supposed to beat these guys. So I'm like, yeah, that's right. So that disbelief, and I think the whole ground felt the same way. I think that Lee Bell had to make those changes straight away. I mean, what's the point waiting at that point? I think I looked at the clock and it was about 35 minutes he made the change. I mean, it was pretty obvious to bring Cooney on, just to try and make some difference. And who else came on? It was Lewis Lee came on, right? Again, it was I don't think there's any great tactics there. I think it just something had to change, and let's roll the dice.
I was a bit surprised it was Osterfield that came off and not throwing Lee in for a bit more structure and a solid sort of three in midfield. But yeah, needed to make a change, didn't we?
The only thing about Osterfield, and it was touched on last week on the pod, I think it was it time for Osterfield to take a rest? So maybe that played into it. I don't think he did anything wrong, particularly more than anyone else in the Forest Green game. But maybe it was one game too much and it was time to just give him a break. And that's why he got pulled. But whatever it was, I think we needed a goal before half time. And I think if that didn't happen, then this game was probably a goner.
Second half, things were a bit better. Definitely an improved performance, or so it seemed. Steve, I'll ask you the question, was it an improved performance or was it just Forest Green sitting back, content to defend a pretty healthy cushion they had?
A little bit of each, I would suggest. I thought that we were markedly more focused and determined. And there was, I don't know, 4 or 5 incidents where you'd expect a goal, wouldn't you, from? And there was a sense, even at the 65 or however many minute mark, when the bar and post was hit by Charlie Kirk. And then we may talk about that again in a minute. But there was a feeling that if we got one, we were on. And because their goal, to be fair, as much as whatever had happened in the first half, their goal led a charmed life the second half. And I turned to my brother after probably about 55, 60 minutes. We'd already had 2 or 3 sort of chances you'd have expected a goal from. And I said, we're not scoring today. whatever happens, we're not scoring. And as it turned out, we didn't. But yeah, it was a better second half. And, you know, we did start chucking everything at it, didn't we? But too little too late, isn't it? When you've set yourself that hurdle to get over three goals, it's there's not a lot you can do other than, yeah, swear.
James, best half an hour, 20 minutes we've seen from Charlie Kirk since his return?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a game and sort of scenario that suits him. When we're chasing a game, when it's against a team that isn't massively physical, that allows us sort of space to pass it around. Yeah, I thought he was decent in that 25 minutes after halftime. Like Steve said, I thought if we get a goal before 70 minutes, then it's on. Something's on. But yeah, Kirky was all right. I'm probably more positive about him than most. I think he's got that bit of quality that we need. Obviously, frustrates fans. We all know that. It's no different to his first spell. But we know what he can do. And yeah, I thought he was all right. And in the chances that we did make, it was usually coming from Kirk, wasn't it? Opening up those opportunities. And then he nearly took that one from Lewis Lee's cross, which was another great ball. Whether that went in, we'll never know. At the time, I couldn't understand how it stayed out, to be honest, from my view, but it did.
That cushioned ball back across for Nevitt's header was sublime. Particularly on his wrong foot, as it were. Absolutely sublime. But as you said, most of the decent moments came from him in the second half. And whether that was because, as you said, the game suited him, or whether at that stage, or whether he just sort of started to hit a bit of form and a bit of confidence, which is odd at 3-0 down, but there you go. But yeah, he put the through ball through as well for Tracy, who couldn't be asked to run after it or bother to control it at that stage. More about him later, I'm sure. And yeah, as you said, those quality moments seem to come via or through Charlie Kirk, which I think tells a story in itself.
Okay, I'm going to throw this one out there to anyone who fancies a stab at it. Charlie Kirk aside, any other positives from that match?
The only other thing I wrote down in my positives column is that Rode it okay. That's about the only other player I think had made any kind of inroads. Again, okay was the overriding theme of that second half, and we didn't look like scoring. I think when Charlie hit the post twice in one shot, I think that pretty much summed it up. But yeah, really, really not a lot of positives to draw out of that game. It kind of fizzled away towards the end when we took Charlie Kirk off. Really not a lot happened after that.
That was an inexplicable decision, other than the fact that he just got himself an orange card, didn't he? That when he absolutely scythed down their fullback.
What a moment that was. That was sensational.
Oh, my God. You're thinking, oh, God, we're 3-0 down. What are you doing? You know, we don't need 10 men. And I don't think we could have complained had he got a red for that. And possibly, that's why they took him off.
I think there's also a suggestion he was injured there, maybe even making that challenge. I think that's why he didn't play yesterday. There was a suggestion he was limping just before he was subbed. So whether it happened during that incredible foul that he committed or not, I don't know. Okay, I think we're probably done on Forest Green. The next treat for you listeners is our summary of the Accrington stalemate. Okay, following the Forest Green game, I think it would be fair to say that quite a few supporters were despondent. Perhaps when the lineup came out for the Accrington game, maybe that mood wasn't really changed. James, you were there. What did you think when you saw that team? It just seems to go from bad to worse, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I was just walking towards the ground. It was extremely windy, getting dust and sand directly into my retinas, which was lovely. Trying to wake out the team. Obviously, no Turns, no CBR, no Kirk. Taberner and Long still not there, and you're looking around and you're thinking, what's happened here. No Harvey Davis as well. So yeah, I was surprised at the extent of the absentees. And then you look a bit further down to the bench and think, wow, we are back to bare bones again. We are back to where we were against Barrow before Christmas. And yeah, it's just hit us all at once again, hasn't it? I think we've got 10 senior pros out, 6 that would probably start if they were fit. So yeah, any confidence I did have took a bit of a hit. But again, the starting 11, strong enough to win that game.
That was pretty much my takeaway too. I saw the names. I mean, I think he took the names he had and put it into whatever formation he could work out. But yeah, you're right. Names on paper, that starting 11 still should be good enough. The bench, certainly no strength in depth anymore, with just pretty much Cooney and Ainley on the bench of any of the senior pros. But I still thought on paper, the starting lineup should have been good enough. I agree with you, James.
Yeah, we're at that stage again, aren't we, where if you've got boots on are actually fit enough to be able to bend over and tie them up, you're getting a game, aren't you, at the moment? Because it's, yeah, but as you said, bare bones. And I don't know, it's been quite quiet, hasn't it, with regards to the injuries. But whether they're tweaks, we hope they're tweaks. I hope they've little, you know, strains or whatever in the back next week, because it's going to be a nervous few games, isn't it, if we've got literally 10, 11 fit outfield players and a load of kids effectively on the bench. It's, I know they've got to get the experience and all of that, but yeah, it's not, you don't want to have to rely on them, do you? And it's not fair on them to have to rely on them to come up with the goods in a you know, pressure game, as they're all becoming it now, aren't they? Because we're 3 points, maybe 4 points off securing our place, and I'm sure we'll talk about that again later.
Yeah, what I was thinking, if any week we could have done without a Tuesday game, it was this one coming. But I guess we don't get that luxury.
In terms of the lineup, when I saw the team, I wasn't sure on formation. Wasn't sure if it was going to be 4 at the back or if we might be 5 with Zach starting. Might have played Rowe right wing back, Rio at left wing back, a la Stockport. But when they lined up, we soon saw that was a 4 at the back. So that surprised me a little bit. Now the pods we previously talked about sort of shoehorning in Zach. Don't think it was necessarily that this week, but we did have the opportunity to play Cooney, didn't we, and move Billington into right centre-back, which may have been better, we'll never know. But yeah, I thought Zach generally did okay. But yeah, just on formation, I'm happy Lee sort of kept it simple and sort of went 4-3-3 with a bit more structure. And yeah, as we've discussed, the lineup was good enough to win the game.
One of my questions was going to be, it was good to see Lee Bell just basically playing players in their best position for once. I mean, James, you mentioned there the shoehorning of Zach Williams into the team. It was just good to see Zach playing as a centre-half, Rio playing at left-back. We're going for a proper three in midfield. It was just nice to see the solidity that not putting round pegs in square holes for once.
Just to back that up, I thought Zach Williams was really, really good yesterday. He looked like he knew what he was doing because he was playing in his favourite position. And I don't know whether it's him that wants to play sort of left back or further forward, or whether it's what the coaching staff are trying to get him to do. But he certainly looked more at home yesterday, and I thought he had his best game he's had for a long time in a crew shirt yesterday, and he didn't really put a foot wrong, I don't think, all game. He looked very assured, and I actually thought with what was available, you know, the positions, the team was probably the right one. I do like Billington at right back because I think he gives us a lot going forward as well as defensively, and he's obviously got a bit of height as well there. It was, I thought Zach had his best game for a while.
I think the real test will be if he starts against Morecambe. That'll be a proper test, because with all due respect, Accrington were dog shit, weren't they? They offered absolutely nothing. I think
they were bland, weren't they? They were, yeah.
I think I would have been all right at centre back. So yeah, Zach had a good game, but let's see how he gets on against Morecambe if he starts. And I hope he does well because it's his favourite position.
So first half starts, and I'll be honest, absolutely nothing happens whatsoever. We look the best, in my opinion, we look the better team. We passed it around quite nicely, but absolutely no thrust or no guile in the final third. I'm just going to throw it out there. Anyone disagree with that? Anything to add about the first half?
What I would like to say about the game and the day in general was the weather was quite nice and sunny, although a bit windy, and there were lovely, lovely people at Accrington. And that's about as much as I've remembered about yesterday, which I think sums up the game sort of fairly succinctly, to be honest. There wasn't an awful lot happened.
My concern is when we did get the ball, sort of Osterfield and Lee, particularly guilty of this, was just sort of whacking the ball into space, into the corners of the pitch. On a windy day, like you say, Steve, I don't know if that's the best way to get at your opponent. And it just felt like we should have been keeping the ball on the floor. You know, we had quite a few technical players, albeit not a lot of our academy graduates, but a decent amount of technical players that we could have potentially played through. I thought it was quite an open game. You know, there was space to be found, and we couldn't break them down. And my concern is Accrington, really. I know they secured their League Two status with this draw, but really, they had nothing to play for, did they? And coming up, the games we've got, you know, Morecambe, playoffs, Grimsby, survival, Wrexham, promotion, Colchester, survival. This is the only game where the opponent really had nothing to play for, and we couldn't break them down.
To me, we just lacked that bit of quality, didn't we? That bit of guile and that bit of technique. I think we're jumping forward now because the first half, nothing happened of any note other than that sort of Nevitt half chance from when he on the turn there that he didn't quite hit. But the second half, I think there was one real bit of quality, a ball in the box, and that was Rio curled one of his crosses in that their centre half just sort of just hacked it in the air because he just needed to get something on it. But other than that, it's like I think we'd still we record. It's 10:33 on Sunday morning when we're recording this, and I think if we were still playing, we wouldn't have scored. Yeah.
You know what I think was disappointing for me is that we did have the opportunities and it just broke down. I mean, it was corner. There was one point there was three corners in the space of a minute, and I can't remember anyone getting on the end of any of them. But we had a lot of corners, a lot of balls to be crossed, and every single one going right down the keeper's throat. It was just that final third. It wasn't like we missed a bunch of chances. We created no chances despite having the ball pretty much exclusively in their half. I mean, one positive, again, Accrington weren't up to much, but we were winning that ball back every time and it was coming straight back. But again, not creating the chances. Maybe that's a concern. I know we have the Long and CBR out, but we just created nothing.
That isn't to have a go at, well, Mattis particularly. I thought he had a great little game, yeah. But he was almost on his own trying to create stuff. Osterfield is going to be a good player, the likes of Lee as well. But I don't think they helped him yesterday. Mattis was trying, and we've said this before about you can tell every good crew side always has crew midfielders in it because they can take the ball on the half turn, all of that. Seemingly players, wherever we get them from, don't seem to be able to do quite the same and sort of finesse the ball around. And Mattis was trying his arse off, for want of a better word, yesterday to do that. But it appeared that there wasn't a lot else going on in terms of that was going to be a technical challenge for the Accrington midfield and defence. And as you said, that was the disappointing thing. Again, we didn't. It's not like we're missing five glaring chances a game, is it? We're not creating them, are we? How many actual goal-scoring opportunities have we created in the last three, four, five games? And we almost, it's that sliding doors moment. And somebody had said it a couple of weeks ago that Morecambe game at 2-0 up is a sliding doors moment, I think, in our season, or appears to be. We don't look the same team since we let that lead slip. And I don't know whether that's a mental thing or whether it is the toll of the season and the players being injured, blah, 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 which might be connected. The toll may be the reason why we've suddenly got them all injured again. And it's a question we may not know the answer, but they may know it internally. I don't know, but they may not tell us either. But yeah, we're not creating the chances, are we? We're not racking them up and, oh my God, he's hit the stand, top of the stand again with a shot he should have scored with, like their lad second half. But I don't know what your thoughts are, guys.
I'd say, actually, contrary to what you said, we did create a hatful of chances against Forest Green, but just couldn't manage to put any of them away.
Yeah,
but you're right.
True, yeah.
In the games aside from that recently, we haven't really had, you've not had your players who will slip that slide rule pass in. You know, you can throw as many forward players as you want on against Forest Green, but where's the guile who's really going to give them the ammunition to create, to have a chance? We haven't got those players
absolutely.
At the moment because they're injured. James, I'll come to you because this might lead us on to another subject. One substitution, Cooney for Rowe, looked like a switch for 3-5-2. You're shaking your head. I think I've come to the right person. What did you think of that?
I really wasn't happy with this at the time. I thought Accrington are the only team with nothing to play for. Yes, we're down to the bare bones. But this game, they were there for the taking, the space to be found. There were chances to be created. And the fact that we only brought Cooney on baffled me. I thought, if you've got Aegis, if you've got Woodcock, yes, they're 18, but they're attacking players. They're fresh legs. There are people on the pitch that are absolutely knackered. And the game was, you know, it was going stale, wasn't it? And I just thought, if Accrington score here and we go 1-0 down, you'd probably bring Aegis or and Woodcock on anyway, I think, to try and get us back in the game. And I just think take the risk. I think... I'm conscious that Belly doesn't want to throw in second-year scholars, as he's called them in post-match interview. But, you know, Holacek was in the squad and came on against Mansfield on the first day of the season. Accrington have got the youngest squad in the league. Accrington's team that started yesterday, I've worked it out, at an average age of 22. So Aegis and Woodcock, for me, I thought, just risk it. Bring them on. One of them, even if it gives the fans a boost, because it was dead in the away end. I just thought it needed something.
Yeah.
The game was there for the taking. I think we should have taken a risk there.
I absolutely agree. You're not sticking him in at centre half, are you? You know what would they have had to lose? What could they have done? I was going to sound really nasty then, but could they have done less than Shiloh Tracy at that stage of the game? Or to be honest, Nevitt, and that isn't to say he didn't, you know, he ran his socks off again yesterday and was visibly wilting. Obviously at Accrington, you're right close to the pitch, so you can see, you can hear the players shouting at each other and what they're calling the referee and everything. And Nevitt was visibly wilting. Now, what we would have had to lose by bringing somebody on, I don't know, with 15, 20 minutes to go, running at some tired legs. Go on, lad, make a name for yourself. And not one person in that crew following would have said, no, you made the wrong decision there. Not one of us. And it's just it's difficult, isn't it? And in hindsight, it's easy to, because if Nevitt wins a ball in the 89th minute and scores, then he looks right, doesn't he, Lee Bell? But I thought yesterday was an ideal opportunity to get one of them to make a name for themselves.
If they're not coming on again in the Accrington game, they're not going to come on in the remaining four games, are they? Wouldn't make
You'd
any
assume
logic.
Not. You'd assume not.
So we've just got Cooney as an impact sub.
With his goal scoring prowess, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Now, James has alluded to it, but yesterday, at the final whistle, one rather opinionated member of the pod squad, who by this point in time has probably consumed a number of alcoholic beverages, did question Lee Bell about the lack of subs, primarily Aegis, at the final whistle. The response that Lee apparently replied with was that he's a second-year scholar and we're trying to get promoted. So I'm just going to kind of throw this out there for discussion. Is it, and you've kind of already kind of touched on it a little bit, is it the wrong situation to be throwing these young lads in? Or if they're on the bench, why are they there if we're not going to use them? But what's your take on that?
Well, my take on it is, in general, I agree with Lee Bell that, you know, these games are not the place in general for testing the new blood and the kids. But this specific scenario that was going on at Accrington, where we're on our last legs, they weren't going to score. There's only upside, really, for bringing them on. You never know. Fresh legs, anything else. So I agree in general. I don't think we should be bringing them on when we're playing Wrexham, maybe, or, you know, or we're playing well, or, you know, it's just any time, you know, we just keep on playing, we're going to score. But in this scenario, we could have gone for it, especially with Lee Bell in his post-match. He definitely talked about the main goal was not conceding. So for me, any of the bringing the kids on to give it a go would have been all upside. But again, I do see the other point of it, that if he feels that Nevitt or Tracy or anyone with the experience like that, you know, it falls on him if we don't get promotion or we don't get the playoff spots. And he probably says, I want the most experienced players on there to get me something and do something for the team. So I guess there's both sides of the fence.
If we get a win against Morecambe or Grimsby, we look silly and Lee Bell looks great. But if we don't, it's what might have been, isn't it?
I'm at the point where I'm fearing that what might have been generally on the wider thing. But anyway, that's another discussion, isn't it?
Okay. Anything else on the Accrington epic?
Well, the only other thing, and it's been a theme on the pod last few weeks, certainly, and in general, Mickey's form. I did want to mention that because I think it was important. I think he had a solid game yesterday. I know it wasn't a super test, but I think he looked very similar to his normal self. He was dominant. Maybe that's because he was playing alongside, you know, a pretty strong Zach Williams. But I certainly thought he looked back to his former self and not his kind of the ragged, maybe that's a bit harsh, but the certainly declined from his high level that we'd seen in the last few weeks.
Yeah, he had a decent game, didn't he? Especially after getting absolutely flattered in the first, what was it, 10 minutes or so?
Oh, God, when I watched that again, he got absolutely clattered. That was not just a late tackle onto his legs. He got taken out. He got probably taken out.
That was funny when he got up. He walked straight across to their centre forward. It wasn't him. It was the other lad who'd run off. He got up and he goes, "Where is he?" Where is he? You could hear him across the pitch. Where is he? He was not amused by that challenge at all. Not at all. It was like, rather you than me on that, mate. But yeah.
I think we've done pretty well there. We've managed to drag about 20 minutes out of that pile of shite yesterday. So that's pretty good.
More than the highlights video.
Yeah, good work there, chaps, doing that. I like that. Right. Okay. Okay, next up for crew is the rearranged match at Morecambe. As Steve's already alluded to, Morecambe at home could well be one of our sliding doors moments of the season. So it's a real chance to gain some revenge, but equally, they are hot on the heels of a playoff spot as well. James, Tuesday night, another nervous 90 minutes?
Absolutely. Yeah, hopefully we'll have a couple of bodies back. Maybe wishful thinking, but hopefully Lee'll have a couple more people to choose from. That'll be useful. Morecambe will be licking the wounds from a 3-0 defeat at home against Doncaster. And like you say, they've got playoffs to play for. I thought they were okay at our place, even though we did dominate the game generally. They've got some decent players. So yeah, I'm nervous with our injury crisis. I'm trying to think if I'd even set up for a point. At the moment, it's hard to see us winning a game. It's hard to see us getting in a position to be winning the game. So yeah, I'm nervously anticipating, but I'm looking forward to a pie because excellent pies at Morecambe.
Martin, Tuesday night at Morecambe, like James has suggested, we're staggering towards the playoffs. We've got a bare squad. We're pretty thin on the ground. Do we just batten down the hatches and grind it out for a point to stagger into the playoffs?
I mean, I think that point by point is how we're going to do this. I think we are literally going to fall over this line, which doesn't necessarily bode well for the playoffs as and when we get there. But I'm hoping that Doncaster defeat for Morecambe on Saturday, took the wind out of their sails there. You know, they're 6 points adrift, I think, of the playoffs right now. So maybe that was the role that kind of tripped them up a little bit, I'm hoping. But yeah, I think anything we get out of Tuesday's game will be a bonus. I don't think statistically, well, can't remember the last time we might have had 3-0 on the trot away from home. But that's, not wishing to jump ahead, but that's almost my prediction for Tuesday. So maybe I should break that because surely we can't have 3-0 on the spin away from home.
Well, yeah, Tuesday's a big game for them. I would suggest having a look. They've almost got to win all of their remaining games, haven't they? I think after their result, they got beat 3-0, didn't they, at home by Donny yesterday, who must be wishing the season was another month longer because Donny seemed to be on a bit of a run at the moment. But that's totally irrelevant. Yeah, it's a game where, yeah, I can't, like the others, I just can't see us scoring. And what I'm fearful of is if we do concede, we may as well turn it off now, aren't we, and put MasterChef or whatever's on the other side. Because it doesn't get tougher than this, does it? No, it's I'm like all the others, we just hope that there's one or two of them back and we've got a few more options and a bit more guile and a bit more creativity, because I don't think we'll get away with the opposition being as tepid as Accrington were yesterday. And would it take a draw now? It's a good question.
Steve, did you just drop a MasterChef gag into the pod?
I did, yeah. I would point out that I am well versed in my hate, I think would be the right term, of MasterChef or anything to do with it.
Okay. Steve, score prediction, although I have a horrible feeling I know what you're going to say.
I 1-0 loss. I'm not confident. Oh. All of my confidence and my bravado has drained this last 3 or 4 weeks.
Martin?
Wow, I thought I was being negative thinking 0-0, but so let me weigh it slightly the other way then. Maybe we'll sneak a 1-0 Mickey goal.
Perfect. James?
2-1 Morecambe.
Okay.
Could I point out I'm doing it on the proviso that I'm always wrong? That's why bookies are rich. So, yeah, that's the proviso I was thinking there.
Okay. I caught up with the Morecambe FC fan feed to get their take on Tuesday night's game. I'm here with James from Morecambe FC feed to talk about the upcoming match. James, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on for the third time. I might actually finally be able to play this game.
Of course, yes. This is the game that was destined never to be, wasn't it? Obviously, because of that, we have played each other fairly recently. And for a lot of Crew fans, in fact, we just recorded our pod and someone has referred to it as a sliding doors moment from our season. Our capitulation from that 2-0 lead has almost been pinpointed by many fans as the start of our slide. So what was your take on that incredible afternoon's events?
Well, it was a good day out, wasn't it? I think a lot of us headed back to the away pub after it with fish and chips in hand, and we had a pretty good evening of it. And I know a few people went out as well on the train back, so it was good. But the actual game, 2-0 down, you're thinking, is it over? Is it the playoff push is over? You know, at least we've had a good season, a season of away days especially. But, you know, we had already won away at Tranmere 3-2, having been 2-0 down. We'd won away at MK Dons, having been 1-0 down. We'd beat Wickham away. We'd beat Lincoln away. These sort of games where we thought, you know what, if we get the next goal, there's a chance we could turn it around. And somehow that happened. I think on balance of the game, I don't think we would have, if you looked at the chances, I don't think you'd have said it was a 3-2 game in our favour. But everything we got, we capitalised, some great finishes. And yeah, we just took advantage.
How have things gone since that game? As I've said, it's not gone very well for Crewe, but how have things gone for Morecambe results-wise?
Not too dissimilar, really, in the first sort of five or six games after it. I know you picked up one win after that game. We won at Crawley, at home to Crawley, sorry, and it was, again, another game where we thought, like, we did enough to win, but Crawley had some good chances and they have some cracking players and you could tell they were trending in the right direction. Then we host Wrexham and there's a dodgy second yellow card and there's a penalty which we thought was a bit dubious at the time, but we played all right. Then we go to Newport and concede five, four of them being pretty basic defensive, you know, not individual errors, just lack of organisation, but we score three and lose 5-3. So on another day, bit of better defending and, you know, we'd come away with that. Go to Salford and the worst probably performance of the season, lose to Salford, and then host Gillingham and make it four losses in a row. And it was just 2-0 up, or yeah, 1-0 up and then 2-1 up, and just three individual errors to concede. And I think the neutrals would have said we at least deserved a point out of that one. But since then, we had the Easter weekend of beating Accrington away, which we never do. We never beat Accrington away in the derby, and then another derby at home to Barrow, the Cumbria side. And just another performance, both of them 2-1 wins, both of them 2-0 up, and both of them we managed to hang on. And then we go into Saturday's game at home to Doncaster and just not good at all. Up there, the one of the worst of the season. The first half was really wind affected and we just didn't cope with it. And the second half, Doncaster, I mean, they're on such a good run. Now six wins in a row and they just looked a lot more solid than we did.
So really a defining point for both teams. Both of us went on a bit of a dip after that game by the sound of it.
Yeah, it's peculiar, isn't it? Especially after we won, but I suppose it sort of highlights how results for some teams can be a massive sucker punch, but also positive results doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go the right way. It just means you've got to continue playing like the underlying stats for us aren't particularly good defensively wise. We're pretty woeful. So, you know, when you do come back from 2-0 down and you survive late scares that Crewe sort of threatened us with, and we survived late scares against Accrington and Barrow too, you know, eventually you're going to be on the wrong side of it.
I remember the game at Crewe. Joe Adams was particularly impressive for you. He scored the first goal. How's he done since then? Is he done well? He's still in the team?
Well, that was his only goal, ironically. As everyone will have seen, he's an attacking midfielder. He's only 19, so you know you can't really. You can have no critique of him because this is his first forage into senior football on loan from Wigan. And they have really high hopes from him. He did well in their pre-season. But since then, it's been a bit stuttering. He started a few games since then. But didn't start against Doncaster, didn't start against Accrington, didn't form particularly well against Barrow. And now we've got our main attacking midfielder, JJ McKinnon, back, who I think we all think he's just going to slot back into where he left off 3 or 4 months ago when he got injured. But he's, Joe Adams is a great talent. He's a brilliant runner. He's got a great finish on him as well, as we saw at Crewe. And he's pretty smart as well. And his step up into senior football at the start, you know, is headless chicken sort of running. But he's smartened up and now looks a player we'd be all happy to see him on loan next season with us to really kick on in the second loan.
Okay. And do you think the match on Tuesday night, is that a must win for Morecambe to retain any playoff hopes?
Definitely. With 11 games to go, Jed Brown and the manager was saying, if we win 6 of those 11, we'll probably get playoffs, or at least, you know, be within a few points of it. And then if you pick up a few draws, you get yourself over the line. Well, since then, we've lost the majority of the games. We've lost 5 games since then, 1-2. So you're looking at it now where, realistically, if we want those 6 wins, we've got to win every single game. And you look at where it's a good opportunity for us against Crewe, obviously, another team we're trying to get ahead of in the table. But you look at Crawley's form, Wimbledon and Walsall ahead of us now, games in hand. Gillingham have basically called off their season and they're on the same number of points as us. So, you know, it'd have to be a miracle and everything would have to go in our way. But nevertheless, it's been a good season, given where we expected to finish, which was pretty low, and all the off-field issues we've had.
I think it's the fact that you've got that game in hand, and that Glen game in hand is against a playoff contender, as in ourselves, that maybe means your season's got a bit more spark in it than the Gillingham one, because they haven't got that ace up their sleeve, have they, really?
Yeah, if we can really turn it on Tuesday, you know, I think we'll all be a bit deluded again and think, you know, what's stopping us from winning the last 3? But one of them's away at Stockport, so that probably says it's probably a difficult one. And then our final home game's against Forest Green, and we have a woeful record at home under Jed Brannan. He's got a great away record, top 6 away record, but home record's just 1 point per game in his 13 games in charge at home. So even at home to Forest Green, you know, when they're fighting for their lives in the last couple of games, and if we're a bit on the beach, I wouldn't be expecting us to really get anything from that, to be honest.
Okay, well, you've mentioned a poor home record. You mentioned that you've got to win with to keep that playoff, that faint playoff dream alive. So, James, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your score prediction for the match that will finally be played on Tuesday night?
I don't even know where to start. Both teams are in, well, Crewe and poor form. I think that's entirely fair to say, as you've said.
Yep.
We're coming off a good Easter weekend, but having been battered by Doncaster 3-0, or 1-1, and I think neither team will be particularly happy with that, but maybe it's something for Crewe to build on.
Okay. James, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
On Saturday, we have the return of Dave Artell and his new side, Grimsby. Obviously, Dave had some unfortunate news over the weekend, and we learned that he'd lost his father. And the pod team all offer their condolences to Dave over this quite sad news. Steve, Dave gave us some fantastic times, but he left under a bit of a cloud. What sort of reception do you think he's likely to get from the Grusty Road faithful at the weekend?
I hope a good one, and I hope the right one, because for whatever Dave's sort of failings, if that's the right word, I think we can all agree that he's a good bloke. He's a nice guy underneath it all, and life goes on, and it's not life or death. And you know, Dave's had some terrible news this last week, you know, in that regard, and it's football, so you know, it's. Give him a clap. He was a captain. He's won at Wembley for both player and manager. And give him a round of applause before the kickoff, and then it's fair game, isn't it? I would suggest. And I think that's the way it should be. We're not the type of crowd, are we? Where we'll give him loads of abuse. He was trying his hardest, wasn't he, in testing times. And some of those issues were without doubt his doing, but some were just, you know, this situation we found ourselves in. And so quick round of applause and let's get on with the game.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of time for Dave Artell and everything he did. And there was no doubt his passion for the job he was trying to do. We all know it kind of came off the rails towards the end. But there were good times. I mean, again, promotion, we can never take that away. You know, he's really had some successful times with us, and I really do hope he gets a good reception. But yeah, lots of time for him, and I'm glad he's working again, because I was worried he was out of the game for a while. I was worried for him that he was not going to come back. So I think it's good for the game that people like him are in it still.
Okay, on to some predictions then for the Grimsby game. Obviously, one obvious prediction is a Grimsby centre forward to be playing right wing back. But aside from that, James, it's difficult to kind of predict, because obviously the result of the Morecambe game is probably going to have a considerable bearing on how this game pans out. But from this distance, what's your prediction for Crewe versus Grimsby?
I believe Grimsby have the worst away record in the league. Picked up 14 points away from home this season, which is lovely. They've been really inconsistent lately. I think this is the one Lee Bella's targeting for the win, and I think we will get the win, and I think it will be a 3-1 win.
Martin?
Yeah, I'm kind of quite confident about this. I don't think, if Grimsby are looking at their run-in, this is probably not the one they think they're going to come and get 3 points from. So I'm hoping it's a terrible game, 2-0 home win.
And Steve, complete the set, please.
I'm reasonably confident about this one. They're going to get their revenge after that shocking defeat at their place a couple of months back. 2-0 Crewe.
Fantastic. I spoke to the View from the Finders End podcast to get the Grimsby take on Saturday's game. I'm here with Chris from the View from the Finders. Hi, Chris. Good to have you with us.
Hi there. Thanks for having us on.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. Obviously, Saturday's game sees the return of the ex-Crewe manager, Dave Artell, to Grasty Road. We're all quite interested in how things have gone and how big Dave's gone down with the Grimsby fans, if I'm honest.
Well, I think it's fair to say he's had a baptism of fire at Grimsby. That's for sure. I think that'd be the politest way of putting it. He's had a lot to deal with on and off the pitch, to be honest. I mean, the off the pitch things, obviously out of his control. We had a youth team player and his father tragically dying in a car crash at the start of the year. So obviously he was heavily involved with dealing with that. As you know, more than likely, Callum Ainley was diagnosed with thyroid cancer at the start of the year as well. So obviously been he's had to deal with that. And then most recently, obviously he's had the sad news and just in the past 48 hours of his father passing away as well. So he's had a lot to contend with off the pitch, and then obviously on the pitch. Ultimately, it's turned into a bit of a relegation fight, really, which none of us really expected at the start of the season. And he's obviously coming into a football club for the first time. Obviously, at Crewe, he came through as you know, through the youth as youth coach and assistant manager, etc. I believe, and then but so obviously coming into a club for the first time, he's having to work with staff that aren't his, players that aren't his, and the supporters that weren't necessarily bowled over at first either. But I think we're getting there now. I think he's starting to win us over. He tried to play a certain type of football when he first came in. I think he quickly realised that wasn't going to be possible just yet, the players we had at the club. And he's changed more recently to a more pragmatic way of playing, and I think that's got both the players and supporters on board.
Okay, how is he setting up at present then? What's the formation and style?
So he's switched to a 5-3-2 in the last couple of month and a half or so. And that's seen as, for a start, concede a lot less goals. We were conceding a ridiculous amount of goals. We were conceding a lot of crosses So one of the first things he's tried to do is shore up the fullback positions, which we have going to back five has aided that. And yeah, we've just tried to make ourselves, I think, a little bit more hard to beat, which we did. We went on a run of 6 games unbeaten, 2 1-0 home wins against Forest Green and MK Dons, which were huge, and a clean sheet on the road at Gillingham as well, which was obviously a big point. And that sort of eased the woes for a little while. Unfortunately, we sort of reverted back to type a little bit against Wrexham and Barrow, but ultimately, you know, good sides going for promotion. And then yesterday, we were back to playing, more pragmatically, and we looked solid against Newport and got a, you know, what could be a vital win.
And I'm desperate to know what the style was that he abandoned. I have a sneaky feeling I might know the answer, but what was the style that he quickly realised wasn't going to work?
Well, I mean, ultimately, you guys are probably most aware of that, having watched Artel's teams before. But yeah, he was trying to get the goalkeeper, obviously, to play the ball out to fullbacks or centre half coming and collecting the ball. For a good few games, the goalkeeper didn't go long once. And then obviously trying to just trying to pass through the thirds. And don't go wrong, it's admirable. And I'm sure, well, he's already suggested that we'll try and return to that going forward, because that's his philosophy and I totally understand it. But it's fair to say that the players we have currently were brought into play for Paul Hurst and Paul Hurst's style of play, which is almost the complete opposite of that. So they weren't as comfortable on the ball, particularly the defenders. And a lot of the time we were moving the ball too slow, just right to left across the back line, going back to the goalkeeper. We were getting caught high by other teams in possession, and I think we conceded 21 goals in 4 or 5 league home games. So it was clear it had to be abandoned. To be honest, I think he could have abandoned it a couple of games beforehand. I think there was maybe a little bit of stubbornness there from Artel, which again he's admitted to since. But it was ultimately, I think a lot of the Grimsby fans sort of dubbed it Pep ball, you know, and it's clear at the bottom of the fourth division, you know, you're not going to have the players necessarily to do that. So, I think we've stumbled across, by a look or design, a better way of playing, a better way that suits the current players. And hopefully, touch wood, that will see us over the line. And I dare say Artel will be able to bring in players that suit the other style in the summer.
Okay, I thought the amount might be the answer. now, from the outside looking in, to me, it looks like you're nearly safe, and it looks really like it's 2 from 3 beneath you. That's obviously me looking at it from a distance. Do you agree, or do you feel you're right in the thick of it still?
Prior to 5 p.m. yesterday, I think we were right in the thick of it still, but I think yesterday could prove a pivotal afternoon. Obviously, our 1-0 win against the other two, the other three teams all lost. And that's the first time that's actually happened for a while. All the teams below us have been winning or picking up good points on the road, and we've been stumbling a little bit. So yesterday, I think, you know, the gap has gone back to 5 points now between us and the relegation zone. We've still got a couple of games in hand, albeit away from home. We've got another sort of arguably winnable game, home game on paper, coming up against Swindon. So yeah, I think yesterday has perhaps just given us that little bit of breathing space that we needed. And certainly the bookies have us now down as being safe. I think they have us 25-1 now, I looked this morning, which is an increase on what it was. So I think yesterday has gone a long way to giving us that confidence that we were going to actually stay up, because to be honest, last weekend was the first time I'd started to worry that perhaps this was going to end in disaster. But touch wood, I think we might just be okay now.
Which brings us on to Saturday, and obviously in the reverse fixture, I think it was one of Artel's first games, if not the first game actually, was a home win for Grimsby. What's your prediction for the return game at Crewe at the weekend?
Yeah, we got a good win that day. It was Artel's first home game, and obviously there was a lot of positivity around it. I think going into next weekend's game, ultimately, Crewe very much still trying to secure that promotion place. Albeit on a little bit of a bumpy run yourselves at the moment. Prior to the Wrexham and Barrow games, we were going away to teams under this new style of play and formation and being really quite difficult to break down. So I'd like to see us return to that perhaps and make it hard for you to play through us. I dare say that's what Artel will do, knowing your strengths. And I'd love us to nick a point which could be vital for us as well. That said, I think you probably have enough quality on the day to perhaps edge it, but I don't think there'll be an awful lot of goals in the game. It might be the odd goal that decides it, looking at both our forms at the moment.
Okay, brilliant. Chris, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Cheers.
Okay, a few bits of business to finish off. Following the Grimsby game, Crewe got a home game against Wrexham. Obviously, we'll preview that in the next pod. But the reason we're discussing this today is, during the week, it has come to light that the kickoff time is being moved to 12:30, with the original time scheduled for 3 o'clock. And obviously, this game having been sold as part of the mini season ticket deal. Probably needs to be emphasised that this is not a decision from the club, but from the Cheshire Police. Chaps, what are your thoughts on this very, very late move of the kickoff time, particularly when it seemed to become a knowledge on social media about 2 or 3 days before it became formal news?
I think it's poor, to be honest. It's going to be a concern, isn't it, that Cheshire Police can't handle a game that's going to have 8,000-9,000 people at. What would they do if we had Liverpool and Everton, or Man U and Man City playing each other within their catchment, their jurisdiction? It's a game, yeah, it's high profile, but it's also, as I said, not exactly the Istanbul derby, is it? And if Cheshire Police can't control a load of 15-year-olds, then, which is where any element, or the only element really, of any sort of potential bother is going to come, then it's disappointing. And I think from our point of view, I think you do have to ask one or two questions as to why seemingly everybody knew about it before the club made the announcement, and also that the club were continuing to sell tickets with 3 p.m. on them when Twitter was alive with the fact that the decision had already been made. The club's still selling tickets, and that at best is disingenuous, because there are going to be people who, if your kids play football on a Saturday morning or whatever, that half 12, or if you're working till 12 or whatever, half 12 might be a push to get there. And it just seems for a game that everybody's known about since June, I think June the 23rd last year was when the fixtures came out. We've all known about this, and we've had so much run up at it. And I think it was 17 days before the game that it's been changed. People have got their work rotas. I'm a 9-to-5er, so it doesn't affect me, but people have got their work rotas, et cetera, et cetera. And it's short notice, isn't it? What happens if you booked a train from London or wherever that you can't change? It's poor, and it's all very well. And I'm sure we understand the reasons that Cheshire Police have made the decision, but explain it. Be honest, explain it. Don't just make the decision. We're in an information age. Explain it, Cheshire Constabulary. Back up why you've done it. Are you aware of a specific risk, of specific issues, or is it just a general, well, we don't fancy him in the pub for a couple more hours? I think it's been poorly handled, and certainly with the notice given as well. I don't know what I'm sure the others would probably think the same, but and I probably just said everything you were going to say. But
I can agree with you more, Steve. It's the late timing more than anything else that is the kicker for me. You're right. It's been the same game at the same time all season. So why now? It doesn't really matter that Wrexham are at the top. Yes, it's an extra bite that they maybe could get promotion or whatever else, but it was always going to be travelling in numbers. It was always going to be a big game as in the context of the, you know, the rivalry. So why would the decision be any different 6 months ago than it is 17 days ago, to your point? I do agree. And a big shout, I'm glad you mentioned it. I mean, as part of the Exile community, just, you know, just like Steve, you know, that's a big deal when you're traveling from a long way away. You make plans. And it's, for me, pretty inconsiderate to change it so late.
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney have to change the time for the private jet, oh, won't they?
And people like me, if I was, I actually considered flying back for this, and that would have really messed me up as well. So I'm kind of glad I wasn't going to be landing at Heathrow.
You're now up at the crack of dawn to watch it, though, probably, are you?
Well, this, yes, I will be. So yeah. It's going to be 5:30 in the morning for me over in the
You're reminiscent of the paint final. But back in the day, I ended up watching on a laptop in a villa in Florida at 7 a.m. or whatever it was, and going, what? Because we didn't expect to get there. You know, it's one of those things, holiday booked, and they're like, yep. Do you realise it's paint final weekend? Oh, God. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, like the others, completely agree with what's been said. I mean, the club have taken the decision to only give Wrexham the ice cream van stand, so... If you can't handle that many fans, you know, we've had more away fans than that in fairly local fixtures, in derby fixtures. What difference is it than against Vale in times gone by?
I was going to say the Vale game. I would say the Vale game is much more volatile than this will be. Like, fair enough, I hate Wrexham. I've hated Wrexham for 40 years, not just the last four since they got the money. I'm quite open about that, but I'm not the type who will be running down Gresty Road with a flare either, though. So, no.
I just think if you come into the football to have a scrap, then you'll probably have a scrap at 3 p.m. or 5 p.m. You're probably not that bothered.
A good point to finish with. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here and suggest that, oh, look, the game can now be streamed on iFollow. Was this done to appease Wrexham's new international fans? But that's just me wearing the tinfoil hat, so... Maybe not. Okay, two last bits of business. And we did have a winner of the last man standing competition. Professional gambler Richard Hoyles snatched the cash with his final selection of MK Dons. Well done to him. Maybe he had some insider knowledge which led to him winning. Who knows? And also congratulations to Pete McGrath, who won the Crew Alex Fantasy Football League final. And obviously the Fantasy Football League final was based on the Forest Green game. So there weren't many high scoring Crew players. But well done to Pete, who wins this year's competition. I'm not quite sure what the prize is yet. Maybe it's just honour. I think Stu mentioned Regan Griffiths match worn shirt last week. Maybe I just prefer the honour. Who knows? Anyway.
Rare item.
Indeed. That's us for this week. The pod will be back next week with the review of the Morecambe and Grimsby game. But for today, Steve, Martin and James, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
And until next time, goodbye. Bomb, 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 bomb